How do early career physicians get involved in physician leadership? Are MBAs required? What types of leadership positions are out there? Learn the answers to these questions and many more on this episode of the Talk to Me Doc podcast.
Welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast, where it's all about serving the early career physician. Let's talk about the unique issues that face us so we can create a better future for ourselves and those to come. And now your host, Dr. Andrew Tisser.
Hey everybody, it's Andrew, and welcome back to the Talk to Me Doc podcast. I'm so happy you're here. For my returning listeners, thank you again. For my new listeners, welcome, because today, like on every episode, I'm bringing you the best guests from all around healthcare and beyond to discuss issues relating to the early career physician. Today, we have Dr. Norm Chapin. Dr. Chapin is an experienced physician executive and coach. He helps physicians interested in transitioning to full or part-time non-clinical leadership roles, either within the healthcare industry or external to healthcare, so they can have a clear strategy for a successful transition to achieve personal satisfaction and professional goals. He served as COO for an emergency medicine management company, CMO for several hospitals, vice president of ambulatory quality for a large multi-specialty medical group, vice president of system quality and safety for a multi-hospital system, along with numerous medical staff positions and other administrative roles. Well, I'm excited. Let's get Norm onto the show.
Please, if you would just introduce yourself, tell the listeners kind of who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm Norm Chapin. I am a physician, obviously. Currently, I'm the chief medical officer for three hospitals in the McLaren Healthcare System, McLaren Bay Region, McLaren Carroll Region, and McLaren Thumb Region. Two of those are small critical access hospitals in the Thumb of Michigan, and the other is a 400-bed acute care hospital located in Bay City, Michigan, which is right at the mouth of the Saginaw River as it empties out into Saginaw Bay.
Cool. All right. Well, and what's your specialty? What'd you train in?
So I did my residency years ago. I finished my residency in 1985 in family medicine at a family medicine residency here in Michigan. And then I practiced family medicine for 2 years, decided that I enjoyed acute hospital-based medicine much more. And at the time, hospitalist programs really weren't a thing that was available. So I grandfathered into emergency medicine starting in 1987. And I practiced pretty much my entire career as an emergency physician with family medicine boards. And then I left emergency medicine in around 2012 and became a full-time hospital administrator.
Great. And I know that you kind of teach people on the side on how to get into some leadership roles as well.
Yes. Yes. I've started doing a lot more coaching and mentoring, especially of young physicians who are interested in the steps necessary to move into leadership roles or really non-clinical roles of any type. It's not just limited to leadership roles within healthcare, but that was certainly how it started out.
Perfect. Well, that'll lead us right into the show. So, Norm, you know, I think my first question is: let's say I'm a brand new attending. I'm just getting out of residency, and you know, I think that maybe hospital administration or any kind of leadership role is in my future. You know, what are the barriers, right? We see all the older guys and gals at the top of the food chain, and there's no place for us young folk, right? So how do we start getting involved with leadership positions right off the gate?
So I think the best advice that I could give to a young physician who's interested in leadership is just to start getting involved, sometimes in very simple projects. Sometimes they may have an interest in a particular quality improvement project in their clinic or in their practice setting in the hospital. In my experience, we're always looking for ambitious physicians who want to help us with a variety of different projects. In this day and age, I don't think there's any limit to the types of things that a physician can be involved in becoming a physician champion of some sort, whether it's utilization management or a certain EMR project or quality project. So I think just expressing that level of interest to your boss, to a physician who is in a leadership role, and say, hey, if you ever need anything, let me know. I'd love to help out. And I think that's the best way to start.
That's really great advice. And you know, I got that advice myself from some of my mentors. And when we moved here to Buffalo, where we're going to stay permanently, my first job, I went right up to the CEO and the CMO, and I said, hey, how can I help? Mm-hmm. And 6 months later, I was in charge of an urgent care, right? I mean, so you never know what positions are available. You never know what's out there. And it's been my experience that there's so few doctors that actually want to be involved that people really look favorably on it.
I had a very similar experience when I was just starting out in emergency medicine. In fact, even when I was starting my first family medicine job, there was a clinic medical director, and she was interested in doing a couple of projects. She didn't have the time to really work on them. And so I went to her and let her know that I'd be interested. And that got me involved in forming a team, learning how to build a team and how to sort of work on projects. And then when I transitioned to emergency medicine, it was the same opportunity. I started out by working with EMS providers to solve a problem that we had when they would bring patients into the emergency department. And we were having a lot of dissatisfied EMS groups. And so the medical director of the ED gave me that responsibility. And from there, I started moving on into quality initiatives, and it just snowballed. And within 4 years of my transition into emergency medicine, I was the medical director of an emergency department in the area. And my career just kind of continued to grow from there. And I agree with you, Andrew. I just think the willingness to get involved really is almost never ignored or never taken advantage of by people in leadership.
Yeah. Once you start making a name for yourself, then, you know, I think after a while, there's too many projects people want to rope you into.
Yes, you do have to be careful about that.
But I mean, honestly, I think that's really, you know, I mean, just thinking about the amount of projects I have that I want to do, if one of my docs said, hey, could I do that? You know, sure, of course.
Right.
It really helps. And it helps you meet other members of the team and other parts of the hospital you'd never get to meet, which I think is just fun in and of itself. So let's, you know, back up a little bit. So there's hospital administration. What other kinds of leadership roles can physicians get involved with? And I know that's a very broad question, but maybe you could give us some general broad answers to that question. You know, what's out there as far as leadership other than the traditional hospital administrator roles?
That's a great question. So if you think about hospital administration, obviously you think about chief medical officer and those types of roles. But before we leave the healthcare arena, I would like to remind physicians not to forget about chief operating officer roles, chief executive officer roles within hospitals or other types of healthcare organizations. I mean, I think too many times we limit ourselves because we think that our job title has to have the word medical doctor in it or medical in it. Physicians are supremely well trained and well positioned to take over any type of leadership role within a healthcare organization, let's say a hospital, a privately owned medical group, or a hospital owned medical group. There are many hospital owned practices such as emergency medicine or radiology, anesthesia, any type of multi-specialty group where physician leadership is extremely critical to the success of the organization. Outside of hospitals, I think there are several areas that are prime targets for physicians. Number one is payer organizations. Increasingly, payer organizations require physician leadership, especially in the age of value-based care, population health management. So I think physicians who have an interest in understanding the payer relationship with the patient and the provider, by that I mean that when a payer says provider, they don't mean you or I. Of course, they mean an organization that they buy services from, most of the time a hospital. So payers are an excellent source. And then there's the medical device industry, which has a tremendous need for physician leadership and physician roles, physicians who can really understand how their products are being used, who can help them create a use case for the product, help them understand why physicians are using it, or more importantly, why physicians aren't using it, what they don't like about it. And physicians are very well suited for those types of roles, research and development, consumer-focused initiatives within medical device industry. And then, of course, you have big pharma. Big pharma is, in some ways, it's a controversial topic. Some physicians don't think they would like to work for big pharma because of the reputation, but there's a lot of clinical development that goes on within pharmaceutical organizations. And there's a huge opportunity to have a massive impact on a scale that you can't accomplish within a single healthcare organization or even within a large healthcare system. So that's attractive to some physicians. And I think those are the four largest areas of opportunity, but there are really an infinite number of organizations. Increasingly now we see these retail clinics popping up. You mentioned you were the medical director for an urgent care. So retail clinics, urgent care clinics, they all benefit from having our leadership and our input into their strategic plans and direction.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, I think too, we're seeing a lot of docs that are getting approached by some of these health tech startups and different things, which are, you know, again, are sexy these days. But I think I've known a couple of docs that got into trouble with, you know, just trading advice for equity that is really worthless during the seeding stages of startups. But that's another opportunity as well as some of these interesting new companies that need medical leadership. So,
Yeah, I agree with you. I think health tech and biotech, I think you do need to, as you said, there's caution that needs to be taken into consideration there. If it's not a really well-established company, and if you are getting in on the ground floor and they're offering you equity, you have to look at those very carefully. Not all of those organizations are going to be here in a year or two.
Yeah, agreed. So let's say we're looking at some of the traditional roles like CMO, right? And you're a new ER doctor, because that's what I know best, right? And you want to be CMO someday. How, other than showing interest and getting involved in some projects, are there certain skills that you think would be really beneficial to kind of acquire? How do you set yourself up for a pathway to CMO?
So that's, in my opinion, this is my opinion. I think there are definitely a set of leadership skills that people in a CMO role or people in a senior level at a leadership level, either the COO or the chief nursing officer, chief executive officer, are going to be looking for. And they're going to want to see those things in the young physician. I have on my website, I have a document which I call the top 10 leadership skills that you can develop. And I've tried to compile those into a format that will help physicians really be able to focus on, again, my opinion of some of the top 10 things that need to be developed. So for example, I think a lot about servant leadership. I think a lot about building highly effective and highly functional teams. If you can show people that you're a very collaborative leader and that you have good communication skills. And by that, I mean, not that you talk well, but that you listen well. And so I think there are multiple, you'll get different advice from different people, but these were just the ones that I compiled into my list. And I'm happy to share that with your audience if they're interested in that. So I think finding opportunities that you can, number one, learn those leadership skills, and number two, showcase those skills. Basically, in a nutshell, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to catch the attention of a senior leader in the organization, and I don't mean senior in the way of age, but someone who's in one of those C-suite type roles, or even if you're an emergency physician or a surgeon, your department chair, your department chief. Catching their attention so that they know, A, that you have an interest, and B, that you have aptitude.
Yeah, that's great. And we'll link to that in the show notes because I'm sure people will be interested in that. Yeah, I think that's a really good advice. You know, one of my mentors long ago told me to pick the most boring committee you could find and join it because that shows that, you know, a willingness to be involved with even the non really fun committees. But I think committees could be a trap too, because you get into too many committees and then you're stretched too thin. But I know the old advice was join a whole bunch of committees, try to chair one of them, and, you know, hopefully somebody figures out who you are someday. But I don't know if I subscribe to that completely.
Yeah, I don't think I subscribe to that completely. I think, as I said before, I think being selective, number one, in my opinion, you have to be passionate about what you're involved in. You can't fake it. And I think if you join a committee that you really have no interest in, oftentimes it backfires because your lack of enthusiasm wanes and your why tends to get a little bit strained as you're involved in this work that really doesn't light your fire. And if you're busy with your clinical practice, I would be selective. I would choose committees. I'm not saying be very mercenary and just pick ones that have the CEO on them, for example. But I think at least picking ones that have alignment with what you're interested and passionate about, because then your natural aptitudes and skills will be more visible to the people on the committee. And your involvement will work its way up the chain and people will start to hear about you without you having to go in and sell yourself.
Yeah. That's where the magic happens. Right. Yep. So shifting a little bit, what do you think, are some of the wrong reasons to go into leadership or to approach a job in leadership? You know, who shouldn't be looking for a leadership position?
Well, that's a hard question for me to answer, I guess. I think if it's purely a financial reason, if you think that you're going to get paid better to do it, but you're not really interested in making improvements or making change in the organization, I think that's the wrong reason. I guess the reasons I think people should be interested in it, and if the reasons aren't these, then they're the wrong reasons. Maybe I'll start there.
That works.
So I think people need to be committed to being a change agent, need to be committed to helping their colleagues, making things better for patients, making things better for the organization, such as improving the quality and the safety within an organization, or improving the financial well-being of the organization or their particular practice. There has to be some type of a positive outcome that they desire that is driving them into a leadership position. If it's to get your own way, for example, if it's to have the best ER schedule, for example, I mean, I've had many physicians, not many, I've had some physicians who I think offered to do the ER schedule for very self-serving interests. And I think you always have to be careful that you're not selecting someone to do a role because they have their own best interests at heart and not the best interests of the group or the team that they're going to be leading or part of.
Yeah, that is a really good point. I think another one I want to add to this discussion is don't do it to escape from clinical medicine, right? Because I don't think that's a good reason to go into leadership because you hate taking care of patients so much, right? I think this is all for the benefit of the patients at the end of the day.
That's right. And I think you and I both know, I mean, our burnout levels within the profession are higher than they've ever been, not just in the physicians, but in healthcare in general. And I think leaving the profession because, and going into a leadership role because you're burned out, number one, I think the burnout will manifest in different ways because the leadership roles are no less challenging than a lot of clinical roles. So I think that escape path is fraught with challenges. I think if you're really tired of and burned out, I think there are avenues that I would suggest to those physicians. Number one, trying to work with a coach or a mentor who can help them restore their sense of joy into the practice, who can help them find a way to restructure their practice so that their work-life balance is better. I mean, we know that burnout is not the problem with the individual. It's usually the problem with the system that you're in or the situation that you're in. So I agree with you. I think going into leadership because you're running away from something instead of running towards something almost always results in a bad outcome.
And I'm busier than I was when I was just working right, clinically.
Me too. I told you tonight before I got on the podcast that I was on the phone. I mean, it's we're recording somewhat late in the evening, 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and I'm still dealing with issues at the hospital. And that's not uncommon. It's not uncommon to get phone calls in the middle of the night with issues that you have to respond to. So it's certainly not a role that guarantees you a better work-life balance.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we were talking about skills a little bit, and given some recent shows I put out here, I want to just touch on MBAs. And you know, do you think that an MBA is absolutely, you know, do you need an MBA to move into some of these roles? What doors do they open and which do they close? And then I'll have follow-up questions from there.
Okay. I definitely don't think that you need an MBA for these roles. So I began pursuing leadership roles, and I was the medical director of our ED group, as you are now, for years. I started in 1999 and I didn't get my MBA until 2009. So 10 years. So I think there are many, many leadership roles that can be at your disposal and that you can be very successful in without an MBA. In fact, I tell my coaching clients and the physicians that I'm mentoring, in almost any situation, if you're a physician, you should never let a job's prerequisites prevent you from applying for the job. So if they say MBA is required and you don't have an MBA, forget about it. Forget about the fact that they say they need an MBA in this role. I would encourage people to apply. I would let people know who you are, what your leadership skills are, what your background is. Oftentimes, they'll create a pathway or a runway for you to complete the MBA as part of the role over a 2 to 3 year period, even if you don't come in with it. So never let the prerequisites prevent you from exploring an opportunity or taking advantage of an opportunity, in my opinion. Now, I do think that the second part of your question is, what doors can an MBA open for you? In my opinion, in my experience, I find that if a physician is interested in growing within their own organization and people have a very, very good sense of their skills and abilities, the MBA is less useful. But as you reach a certain level in the organization, or if you decide to pursue a career in which you're transitioning from one organization to another organization, I think that having a degree that tells the people who you are interviewing with the level of commitment that you have to leadership, to physician leadership specifically, and to learning those skills that will help you in that role, it becomes increasingly important. So I completed my MBA, as I said, in 2009. I didn't need to get it. I was just offered the CMO position in an organization I had worked at for 15 years. And it wasn't a barrier to me getting that job. But I knew that if I wanted to transition to a different healthcare organization, I talked to many coaches and mentors and I got the same advice. It will be a degree that is valuable as you seek larger and larger roles and as you want to move from organization to organization.
That's very reasonable. And do you think, you know, we're not coming out of business school looking for jobs, right? We're physicians adding to our skill set. Do you think the actual university or degree program you go through is matters in that sense, or is it more of just having the knowledge and the letters after your name?
So in general, I think it's having the knowledge, and I think that a person can design a training curriculum for themselves that doesn't result in a degree that can provide them with the same level of knowledge as any good MBA program. So I would say in general, for a clinician who's looking for leadership roles within any of the situations that I mentioned to you previously, healthcare, payer, pharma, or medical device, I think it matters less, A, that you have a degree versus the knowledge. But if you have a degree, it matters less where you actually got the degree, as long as it's an accredited organization. Now, for some physicians who are interested in academia and who want to move into governmental positions or research institutions, then I think sometimes there's a little more scrutiny about where you did your master's in public health, for example, or where you did your MHSA, or where you did your MBA. And I would only clarify my comments in that one situation. But if you're interested in leadership within a community hospital setting, even a large healthcare system, I think the fact that you have the degree is what people look at, not where you got it from.
All right. Makes sense. Well, Norm, we're running out of time, so I'm just going to transition the show a little bit to get to know you a little bit better. What do you like to do for fun?
So I have my interests range from electronics. I like to do amateur radio. I've been in amateur radio now for 35 or 40 years. And my wife and I, when we were younger, we were bicycling enthusiasts, and we've started to do that again. Where we're living right now in Michigan, there's some really nice rail trails and that type of thing that we like to take advantage of. And then I like to travel. My wife and I like to travel a lot. We have kids out in New York State, and we have kids in the northern part of Michigan and friends up in the UP. I traveled out to a couple of national parks this year, which was a lot of fun, something that I had wanted to do. So those are really my three big hobbies right now. I like to golf, but my problem is that a lot of people don't like to golf with me because I'm not a very good golfer.
I'm right there with you.
It takes a lot of work to become a good golfer, and I've just never invested the time to do it.
Fair enough. Do you have any book recommendations for the listeners? Could be any topic.
Oh, wow. So I guess the books that I would recommend trying to think what I would recommend. I've been reading a book recently on how to prevent physician burnout. I can't remember the author right now, but it's How to Prevent Physician Burnout. I've become much more interested in my current role because of the pain and suffering that I see all around me in physicians and in trying to help them with burnout. And I'm also I'm very involved in lean management and patient safety improvement. And there was a series of books that were written sort of on the basis of the Wizard of Oz, and kind of developing that into a patient safety roadmap, I would say. And there's a series of three books, and I haven't read them for a long time, but one of the books that I just started going back through a few days ago, which reminded me of how much I enjoyed it, is How Did That Happen? And it kind of takes you through a better understanding of how things go wrong in organizations and how you have to maintain a high level of awareness to situational readiness and really what's going on at the front line in your organization. So that's a book that I just picked up off my shelf that I hadn't looked at for 5 or 6 years. And I really enjoyed reading it again.
Yeah, I haven't read that one or that series, so I'll have to check that out. You've given us a lot of advice already thus far, but if you could give the early career physician just a single piece of advice, what would that be?
A single piece of advice is follow your gut. If you're interested in doing something, do it. Don't let anything stand between you and something that you think is going to be enjoyable and is going to benefit you professionally or personally. The worst that can happen is that you find out you were wrong, but if you never tried it, you would have never learned that. So expose yourself to whatever suits your fancy. And try it, see if you like it, see if it fits you and if you fit it. And if not, then reassess what other opportunities you'd like to take advantage of.
Love that. That's great. Great advice. Well, if people want to find out more about you and what you do, where can they find you?
So my website is www.physiciansbeyondthebedside.com. And I have links there to various materials such as the top 10 leadership skills. I have a decision-making infographic that people can access as well. And of course, all of my podcasts are there.
Great. All those links will be in the show notes. Thank you so much for coming on the show and chatting with me about leadership and something I'm passionate about myself. I really appreciate it. I think this is going to be a great episode, full of value for the listeners.
Thanks, Andrew. I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed your questions, and this was a great interview. So thank you for doing
it. Absolutely. We'll talk soon. What a great episode with Dr. Norm Chapin. I really enjoyed the conversation. If you like this show, please remember to go on Apple Podcasts and leave me an honest rating and review, as well as share it with at least two of your friends or colleagues. The other thing I'd like you to do after listening is follow me on LinkedIn, Andrew Tisser DL. That's all we have for today, everybody. As always, keep talking.
All opinions expressed by the guest in this episode are solely the guest's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof. The guest's opinions are based upon information he or she considers reliable, but Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, nor any affiliates thereof warrant its completeness or accuracy. The guest, Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof are not under any obligation to update or correct any information provided in this episode. The guest's statements and opinions are subject to change without notice.